Okay, everyone, welcome. It is the 14th of October, the year 2025. We are on training call number two today. And for those listening to the recording, I was just saying to everyone here live, I got a little scratch in my throat today. You're definitely going to hear it. I can certainly hear it coming from my voice. A little sore throat. I feel good. But it's a little funky in there. So we're gonna go. Today isn't one of the longer calls, so we'll see how we go. And if for some reason I need to cut this short, we'll add the recording from last round, which has me with no sore throat sounding all good. So yeah, this is how we have to do it. Before we get into today though, just as we did last week for training call number one, take a second to connect to the ground under you. I'm just going to double check all is good here with sound. We're living in two different worlds. A bunch of people can't hear, and a bunch of people say it's just fine. I'm going to trust it's good. So we'll keep going. So take a second to feel that ground under you. I'm just going to orient to who is here today. I see familiar faces. Hey, Susan, to see your face. One of our main assistants. Rebecca's here in the chat if there are any questions that come up as we go live. See some familiar faces, some new faces. Can't get rid of you, Helen. You're there again. Hi. It's also great to see. I'm gonna give a shout out to the guys. It's really those who've been around for a long time know that when we started this, it was purely mainly just the ladies, the women. And it's really nice to see more men of all ages here. So thank you for showing up. I know that typically it is typically the females that take this healing on first, not always, but just really grateful for everyone here and to see all sorts, everyone showing up, and many young people. I'm also going to say that nothing against you, the older folk here, trust me, but it's so nice to see younger energy. Because the earlier we can get this in, the better. And I know from hearing from our older folk, and by older folk, I mean like 70s plus everyone. I'm 50, so 70s, 80s, because I know we have some in the 80s here. If you are in your 80th year or even your 90th year, let me know. I'd love to see that in the chat. But people will say over and over again, I wish I had this when I was younger. I could tear up thinking about it, right? I wish I had this when I was younger. I feel fortunate that I came across this work, at least the trauma work, in my 30s. But yeah, gosh, wish my parents had it, right? Wish my grandparents had it. So, yes, it's so nice, someone said, to see younger people taking care of themselves at a young age. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So, a reminder as we go through the theory to continue to take care of yourself. Speaking of taking care of yourselves, the screen is very seductive, draws you in. I have to constantly bring myself back on my chair because I kind of want to join all of you in your screens, and that's not good for my spine. So notice in your own system, this is that potent posture. Who here remembers the potent posture lesson? It's early on in the labs. You could play with that also with sitting. I just went through a year-long mentorship with some practitioners in training, and those poor people, they got the sit to stand Feldenkrais lessons drilled into them for 14 days over two intensives. Six, it was more 13 days. And this ability to really feel our skeleton and all out, and just feel that even now, noticing your pelvis. How you can move, across the chair. Of course, if you're on a sofa or a couch, it's harder to feel that structure, but you can still feel your feet on the floor. So just keep note of your body. And this is one way to stay embodied when you're learning, is to feel your posture in space. Keep that flow. We talked about flow last week. When this skeleton of ours, when the pelvis, when all of these things are off and not in our awareness, we lose our flow. We lose our flow. So, very important to tune into these tiny little things that we think are solo one-off lessons, like the potent posture, but it's in how we sit. It's in how we might stand to make ourselves a cup of tea, to put laundry in the laundry machine, we brush our teeth, grocery store. And then the eyes, as I mentioned at the beginning, we have a tendency to get drawn in, and that can create strain in our neck, in our jaw. So allow yourself, even now, maybe as we get started, to let your eyes wander a little bit and see what's around. And also notice your breath, how it's there, bringing in oxygen. Feeding your cells. Thankfully, we don't have to think about that. It just happens. And then the exhale brings the waste products out. This in and out. Some of you will get into the breathing lessons shortly. Others, you've done them before. But again, those are lessons where you do them in a moment in time, but you can experience those whether you're sitting, driving, walking. So, this ability to really integrate, even now, the beginning things that you're learning. And I'm curious to know who here has found, and please put any notes in the chat as this comes up, who here has found, especially those really new here, that they're starting to already notice that they're orienting a little more naturally. That you're listening to your impulse a bit more. Maybe you're noticing other people and their stress response a bit more. So lots of yeses, orienting more, connecting to my feet. Yep. Yeah, and for those of you that have done a little bit already, this is a continuation. Great, thanks. You might see things in your home that you haven't seen in a while. You might go to a common store that you're used to and see an area or colors that you've never noticed before. These sorts of things that just aren't in our frame of mind or frame of reference, I should say. And then they just slowly start to. It's almost like the environment starts to fill up with more color because our peripheral vision is softer. Our peripheral vision is less in fight flight. Yeah. It's less in vigilance and it's more in curiosity. So let's get onto page one here. So, quick points at the beginning. I want to reiterate the importance of the biology of stress videos, obviously, these training calls, the Q&A calls that Seth and team do where they're answering questions. The first word there is education is key, or the first three words. Education is key. And I hope this is becoming more obvious as you get deeper into learning some of the theory. Is when something's occurring and it doesn't make sense, when we understand a little bit more about how our stress gets stored, how we store stuff, it starts to go in our mind, oh, wow, that's why I can't sleep after that happens. Or this is why I feel like I want to attack someone after that conversation. Or this is why I've got a little pain in my lower back. It's because my kidneys and adrenals have been fighting and clenching for so long, for some of us since before we were born. And now that I'm noticing them, I'm really feeling the achiness, the tension, as opposed to, oh, what's all this sensation? What's all this tension? What's all this stress? What's all this fear? We start to become more differentiated. We start to become more cognitively aware of, oh, that's what that is. This is what that is. So our education here is super important. And you might find that as you go through some of the biology of stress videos, for example, you will feel, or you might feel, I don't want to make a generalization, but often people will feel their bodies respond. Has anybody felt that when they start to listen to something on, say, the videos, or even my YouTube videos can be there, that maybe the heart starts to shift or a tightness starts to happen or some tears? And I just see some gentle nods as I say that. So this is normal. It shows that your system is taking in that information. It also shows that you're embodying it, right? It's very easy to hear something and to just go right over your head and it to not register. So the next line down, again, these are important points. Continue to grow more exit paths and expand space in the nervous system and body system. So this comes back to a quick review of last week, the training call. Grow the pool. So that's the first word, grow the pool. The body capacity. And thanks for all your comments, guys, in the chat. We'll keep it quiet now as we get back into the teaching, the training. And then the next line down, take out the balls, right? So that's taking out our stressors, whether it's in the moment stress, past stress, old traumas, take out the balls. Don't let the acute stress stick. Release the old stored procedural memories. That's the word. In biology of stress, video number 5, you'll learn about procedural memories and declarative memories and why those are important. So take out the balls. Don't let the acute stress stick. Release the old, release these stored procedural memories. Third bullet point down. This is really important. There's two importance here. It's not, that's the word, it's not important to process every single event that has happened to you that has been stressful. That would be impossible. You're not going to remember all the things that have occurred, especially when we're little. So we're in some ways working with the totality of our system. And a funny thing happens where when we take out one thing, it's like a proxy for others. The essence of that thing. I mentioned the stubbed toe the other day. You stub your toe on the coffee table, it hurts like heck. You cry at an amount that doesn't make sense because your toe's actually fine. It just stung. But those tears, the grief, as we might call it, the ugly cry, crying that's coming out, it's allowing the system to bring out what maybe never got to happen through our entire life. So do not underestimate when you do something in current day that doesn't feel that big, but it creates a huge emotional reaction, or maybe even a tremor, tremoring, a shaking, a heat change, a cooling change. Some people will get really cold, they might shiver, they might start to sweat. They might have trouble sleeping. They might need to sleep a lot, right? There's no rhyme or reason here. That's a sign that you've taken out a big ass boulder from your pool with that one stub of your toe. So again, it's not important to process every single event, nor would we want to. Biological embodiment, next one. So biological embodiment, this interoception. Again, these are just some quick points, some review. This ability to learn, learning how to listen. That's the word to the body signals. Really learning how to listen. As a reminder, when we were growing up, generalizing here, if we did not have mom or dad or school teacher or the person looking after us who allowed us to feel what was happening in our body because of their cultural conditioning or their discomfort in seeing us in discomfort. That's one of the big reasons when adults see little people in discomfort, often they try to shut that down because they don't like what they're feeling when they see a little person in discomfort. Right? So that shows a lack of capacity typically on the adult. And there's no shame in that. That's because they probably didn't get it from their parents, and hence the generational trauma wheel that we're trying to stop. So this ability to really listen to the body is so important. I'll share a quick story. Came to mind, so I'm going to share it. When I was learning all my trauma stuff, I was in the Bay Area and of California, and I often stayed with one of my best friends, and he had twins, two little twins. The twins are now in college, so this was a while ago. And I showed up at the house, and the little girl, she might have been 7 at the time, the nanny was with her, and she fell on the steps going up to the house. She scraped her knee pretty badly. I think she hit her elbow. She started to cry. And the nanny, who I will admit I didn't like, and the nanny didn't stick around for much, much longer, told her, "Get up, get up. You're fine, you're fine. Come on, be a big girl." And so she listened to the nanny. They went inside. And then when the nanny was gone, I went to the little girl. And I've known this little girl since she was in mom's tummy, so a long time. I said, "Hey, you feeling okay? You know, it's okay if you've got some tears." And she got so defiant, "I'm fine." And you could just see she was trapping all that stuff in. I was like, "Oh, you poor thing." So it's these, it, again, these little things of how we stop listening start so young, and we're in protection mode. And so, you know, these are the things we as adults are working with, and we're not going to remember the times when our caregiver told us to stop crying, or you can't feel that, or you can't touch that, or we can't do that. This is what feeds our essence of something's not right. It's not okay out there. I can't be who I am. I can't express, because if I do, I might get shut down. I might get hurt. I might get isolated. This is where this concept of, you know, timeouts is very harmful for little kids, right? They don't understand what's going on. And so social isolation is punishment, and it makes them feel even more scared, right? And then that's not good. So, next section, pink section. So, we're going to go into a little part here that I call somatic first aid, how to practice somatic first aid. This is kind of like something I like to do at the beginning of SBSM so that you know that how you approach current day stressors will be sort of your ongoing quote unquote assignment. Because how you engage with daily stress going on, because there's going to be stress, daily traumas, is going to be very dependent on time of day, how you feel, who's around you, what you have access to. There isn't this is what you have to do, but it's good to know some of the things. So, of course, as we know, general first aid out in the field is where someone has a physical injury and, you know, you want to help them with whatever it is that might be going on, whether it's minor or life-threatening. So I have that here in the first sentence, number one. I have here, write down four things you can do, and we'll go through these when a minor, and then I'm going to have not life harming event or stress takes place. I really want to highlight not life harming, Because if you really are in a life or death situation, all of this goes out the window. You might need to go into shock. You might need to, get help that isn't the best, right? So this is non-life harming. Same with children. So if you take care of kids, if you have kids, if they fall on the street and they're on the sidewalk or on the road, that isn't the time to get them to orient and feel the space if there's cars coming. Scoop them up, get them off, make sure there's them safe. I know that's kind of common sense, but we worry about this stuff after. So the four things I'm gonna mention, and then you can write these down. Orient. So as soon as something happens, it's a stressor. And these are not in order of importance. So if you want to get more creative, you could write these in a circle like we did last week and connect them because it really depends on where you are, what's happening. So I'm just going to name them. Orient, connect to the ground, notice your breath, follow impulse. It could be connect to a person. I have here any others. It could be resourcing to something. It could be grabbing a glass of water. It's no coincidence that when people are stressed, and you see this always on TV shows, cop shows, they give someone a glass of water when they're interrogating them. Sounds strange, but it's like it shows some goodwill. Like, we want you to stay hydrated. By swallowing, having some fluids in, it perks the system up. It does put it into a little bit of ventral vagal. So these are all, again, I'll say them again. These are all what I call the basics, nervous system health basics. Orienting, connecting to the ground, noticing your breath, following impulse, resourcing, having a glass of water, maybe going for a walk. Music, that would be a resource, right? Connecting to the ground, we're doing it now. So it could be earthing, it could be getting your feet on the grass, but it's just feeling it. For me, really, it's sensing the weight of the body, that pressure, that contact. Potent posture is less important here. I'm not saying that you can't do it. But let's just say you have an accident and you're on the grass. You just, I don't know, got hit by a soccer ball or something like that. Not very nice. You've got a little bit of zing in your head or on your thigh. You're on the floor. You feel that ground. You feel the texture of the grass, maybe the temperature. Maybe you listen to your breath. You feel it, but you don't change it necessarily. Typically, when we have a physical accident, there's a sting, right? There's a pain. There's a sensation. Three might rub it, rub the area, touch it, squeeze it, feel it. That's a soothing, right? We naturally self-soothe. If it's something more emotional, we might feel our breath start to get tight. And in that might be tears, there might be anger. So again, that's following that impulse. All right. So all of this comes back down to, how can you be in the moment, pause, sense, and listen to what your system wants to do next? If I think about children, when I have been around children and they've been given the space, let's say they fall off their bike, they're on the street, they're safe, there will be cries, there will be maybe some screams. If you try to go to them prematurely, often kids will bat you off. Parents who have allowed their kids, you'll know this. They'll like, I don't want you. I don't want you. They're not trying to be mean. They're in their process. So you just stay there. I'm right here. And their breath will regulate. They'll do that kind of, right? That kind of cry. And then as soon as they feel a little bit of opening, and this comes back to the polyvagal theory, they reach. And then that's where you come in, and then that's where maybe the real sobs. Oh, and that's where the parent is like, I know that was scary. We're here. We're okay. And then that's where we might have some humor. That stupid bike, you know, oh, let's see what we can do to make that bike, you know, blah, 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 right? It depends what it is. Right. So this process is quite natural in children. And when we really just have hands off and we're just connected and contained with the energy, they will know I can be safe to let this out. And this is the same for if you have a partner, a spouse, a friend, you know, it's same with adults. Someone just had some really bad news. You just don't try to fix them. Just like, man, that sucks. Let's just sit here. Let's just feel it. Let yourself do whatever you need to do. Can I do anything? And if someone says no, believe them. Right? That's okay, cool. Just when you need something, let me know. Okay. Two, bottom of the page. If you can, so this comes back to, you know, if there's a stressful thing that happens, an accident, an emotional incident, if you can't in the moment, if you can't process the somatic experience, those are the two words, in the moment, make a conscious note. That's the two words, the next two words. Make a conscious note or note to yourself, your mind, to do so when you have time and space. So what does that mean? Go to page two here. I'll read these through and then I'll give you some examples, more examples. For example, do some nervous system health basics. I just named them grounding, orienting, following breath, impulses, etc. So do some nervous system health basics, either organically or use the neurosensory exercises that you have access to in SPSM. Plug in orienting, plug in potent posture. I'm making it sound like it's a cassette tape. You don't plug it in, you press play, right? Plug in whatever you want. And just even having that sound of guidance into the body, even if you're not perfectly adhering to it, can be a resource. I have heard from some people that they'll just push play and listen while they're doing things because it helps regulate their tone while they're doing, say, a chore or something like that. I see Ellen nodding, right? So I had the same experience with some of the Feldenkrais training I have done. I'll listen to a lesson from one of my mentors, but I'm not on the ground actually doing it. I'm just hearing his voice and the tone and the pauses. And then as I do something around my world, around my house, I am more conscious and extra aware by having that voice in the background. So something to just consider. So seek out some social support. Sorry, said that the wrong way. Seek out some support and social engagement. Seek out some support and social engagement. So that's the next line down. And that would be, you know, you had something stressful, if you have a friend, if you have a partner, if you have a family member, if you have a pet, right? Reaching out, connecting, feeling the energy of another live creature can be very, very helpful at bringing the system back down. In Peter's book, I believe it's In an Unspoken Voice, not his first book, one of his more recent books. He talks about how he was hit by a car. He had a pretty bad accident. And he knows that if there wasn't a person on the street who happened to be walking by who stayed with him as they waited for the ambulance, he would have probably had PTSD after that accident. And he was okay in the end, but you're in shock. It's scary. You don't know what's happening. And this pedestrian, you know, Good Samaritan just stood, kept, stayed with him, talked to him, and that really helped. So, again, seek out support, social engagement. Connect with nature. That's the next one. Connect with nature. Literal or visualization. So that could be walking outside. And by the way, if you live in a city, if you don't have a big park right in front of you, you can still connect to nature by feeling the temperature of the air. by looking up to the sky, right? Clouds, the birds. There's ways to connect to that, even if it's not, immersive in forest or rivers or beaches. But this is why a lot of things that I found helpful for some, if you go to YouTube and you look up, has anybody used this, like ocean sounds or bird sounds, you can get these long tracks of 10 hours of streams and nature sounds, and you just press play and you can have that kind of be in the background. I've used that at times when I've been in hotels where there's a hum that's so loud that I can't get to sleep, and I'll put on some water sounds and I hear the water, not the industrial hum of like an air conditioning unit or something like that. So again, ways we're talking in this case, ways of bringing our system down after we've had some form of stress, some form of traumatic event. Make use of resources. Music, movement. I've already mentioned this, of course. This is where spiritual practice comes in. Prayer, connecting to a source, an energy bigger than us, right? This is where hugging trees has a different meaning, right? It's just feeling that big, strong energy that's alive. Anything that grounds you. So I've mentioned I was going to give you an example. So on the end of page one, I said, if you can't process the somatic experience in the moment, do it later. And this is the bread and butter of going and seeing a somatic trauma therapist. Typically, you don't go to someone like myself or Rebecca or any of our colleagues who support SBSM, for example, with something that's happened in the moment. Now, of course, if you can, wonderful. If you have an accident and you have the opportunity to work with a practitioner in real time or within a week or two of an accident, I highly recommend that because it's a lot easier when it's fresh. But a lot of the stuff we're working with is back in our childhood, even before we could remember, right? This is pre-verbal trauma work. And so one of the ways we tap into stuff in the back, in the past history, is we remember what was going on in our life. So you might go, oh, Irene, how am I going to tap into that scary conversation I had with my kid's school teacher who reminds me of the school teacher I had who I didn't like? It's like, well, you obviously can't go back in time into that moment, but you can think about how the room looked. What was the person wearing? Was it raining that day outside? Was it summer? Was it summer break? What were the elements? And again, this is what you'll learn in video number five, Biology of Stress video number five. What were the memories? These are the declarative memories. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. It's where you can name, it was a sunny day. I remember because I was really hot, blah, blah, blah. Or it was snowy. I know it was snowy because I had that car accident because it was icy, for example. Right. So we tap into those sorts of memories that don't have a lot of heat or trauma or stress around them. They're the mundane. Oh, it happened. I fell down the stairs at the mall. Oh my God, it was so mortifying. I was so embarrassed. All my groceries, went over and all the things. But that's where I would say, okay, as soon as you start to talk about that event at the mall, falling and spilling all your groceries, that's where you pause. You then leave the memory and you go into the body. And then you see what's there. And then that's where, oh, my breath just got held. Oh, I'm having a desire to like move a little bit. Or I feel this desire to just start crying or whatever it is. So again, this comes back to following impulse, following your breath, orienting if need be, finding ways to resource, or maybe your system's like, oh, I really want to process this and feel it. And the emotions are there, and I'm going to let myself sense the humiliation, the shame, the wasted money because all my groceries just spilled, for everyone to see. Like all these things that are in the moment so overwhelming we can't process them. So we're sort of unpacking. So that's what I mean by we might need to work on something later consciously. And when we understand how memory works and how memory can be a gateway into the old somatic experience, we can do a lot with ourselves. I'm not saying that we shouldn't work with someone if we can and if we have the option and availability and resource, but this is one way we can do it. So I'm going to take a little bit of drink here. Take a moment to shift if you need to shift. My throat seems to have calmed down, which is good. Yeah, some people say here mantra is whale singing. That's cool. Yeah, and someone mentioned apps. There's so many, maybe too many apps for us to choose from, but so many things we have access to that can be useful as resources, right? I think it's not a coincidence that so many of us love animal videos on social media and old sitcoms that are just super funny. You know, like I watched a funny one the other day from, I think it was the old TV show Frasier, and I just loved it. Just the simplicity of the dialogue, the funniness with the three people, and it was just such pure innocent comedy, right? So, okay, all right, let's come back to things here. The four whens. So this is something that I would say, and guys, I know that we're in a bit of a chatty mode, but again, I know that there's a lot of wonders about apps and finding things. Don't worry about it right now. Remember, we're in a bit of a lecture hall here. Google is a great place. You can email or Google up meditation apps, sound apps after the call. So the four whens. So this is something that often people don't teach. When it comes to somatic trauma work, I call it the four whens. They are, I'll read them and then we'll get into the lines here. When not to resource, when not to orient, when not to take a deep breath. And then the fourth is what to do when you're not sure what to do. So that's a little bit of humor there, but sometimes we don't know what to do and that's okay. So the four when. So the first one here is when not to resource. So again, as a reminder, resourcing from lab one, lesson one, is an external typically thing, but it can be internal. Usually when you start this work, most of your resources are external, right? People, pets, plants, nature, music, warm baths, blah, 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 all that stuff. Internal would be noticing, say, our breath. Internal would be putting our attention into our kidney adrenals to calm ourselves down. Internal would be practicing some of the diaphragm lessons that you're about to learn or practicing potent posture. Even reasoning and listening to your mind and going into more of a meditative space where you take the chatter out is an internal resource. Granted, you're doing it spontaneously on your own without this outside thing telling you what to do. Hope that clarifies the difference between internal and external. And they cross paths, and an external resource might lead to an internal resource. And over time, you will find that your internal resourcing increases, just like a child typically needs their blankies, their favorite stuffed animals, all their favorite things to feel safe. Now, of course, I know adults have this too. I have my favorite things as well that I travel with. But as we gain more self-regulation, we don't need all those things to the same degree because we know how to be internal and self-regulate. But some of these things can actually limit us from processing traumas. Because they oversoothe us, they over-resource us. So, when to resource externally versus internally depends, it's a big word there, simple word, but important, depends on many factors. Many factors. So, second line, as more capacity, that's the next word on the second line there. As more capacity is cultivated, bigger pool, in parentheses, bigger pool, and more containment is on board. That's the next word. More exit paths and better biological embodiment. And I'll read this again. The need for external resources decreases. So the need for external resources decreases. As more capacity, I'll read it one more time. And of course, the answers are also on the handouts. As more capacity is cultivated, there's a bigger pool and more containment is on board, more exit paths, so releasing stress more, and better biological embodiment, the need for external resources decreases. This is just becoming more self-regulated, right? One of my favorite stories was an old client who, this is when I was in private practice, she'd show up with this giant purse, real nice purse with stuff in, like essential oils and snack and water bottle and probably some cards, deck card. I don't know, just so much stuff was in her purse. And by the time we finished, she would just show up to our sessions with her wallet and her keys to her car. And I remember her noticing that it wasn't conscious that she wasn't bringing this purse with all her stuff. It just became natural. She's like, I don't need the peppermint oil to pep me up and the calming oil, lavender oil to bring me down. And at some point, she needed those, right, for solid, important resources. But she knew we had water at the place. I had snacks if she needed something, and there's an extra blanket if she was too cold. And so that's a person who's really growing regulation and trust. So I always think of that one. And she's still doing beautifully, married, happy, and not living in that chronic fear. So super good to hear, and I wanted to share that because we'll notice that we don't need as much usually when we go places when we're more regulated. So the next line down, we might consider not. So it's worded a bit funny. We might consider not going to a resource when we are feeling a somatic experience bubbling up or already present. At this time, we might stick with what is being felt somatically so we can access it and integrate it. So what this means is, we might consider not going to a resource. So let's just say you're feeling a big stress and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I gotta go get this thing. And at that point, if you can use a little bit of your higher brain to go, could I actually be with this without this thing right now? So you gotta ask yourself that question. And see, can I be with this? Can I be with this somatic experience that's bubbling up? It's already present. Can I stick with what's being felt so we can access it and integrate it? Now, what's the T word in trauma healing? Titration. Maybe you stick with that somatic experience for a minute. It's like you're dipping into that tightness. It's like, I'm gonna feel this just for a little bit. And then you're like, kind of like with martial arts, I gotta tap out. Like, oh, I'm out. I can't do this anymore. I'm gonna go and grab that cup of tea. I'm gonna make that cup of tea. I'm gonna have that thing. But I'm gonna feel this uncomfortableness just for a little bit to see how far I can feel this while still staying connected. And this is one of the most important things. Can I be with this somatic experience, this intensity, this emotion, whatever it might be, this memory? It could be a memory. But the key is, can I still feel my feet on the ground? Can I still know that I'm here on planet Earth on October 14th? So it's staying in the present moment. We go too far and we don't contain. when we don't contain something and we go a little bit too past our ability and edge, that's where we might dissociate. That's where we might go into a little more of a hyperactivation that feels uncomfortable. And this, my friends, is where this gets really tricky, is we sometimes have to feel the uncomfortable to process something. Usually we do have to feel the uncomfortable, but the difference is, can you feel the uncomfortable and stay contained, which is what we talked about last week? Feel that uncomfortableness, but be completely present with it and not have to resource, not have to do something to get out of that feeling. A lot of the strategies, perhaps, that some of you have used have helped you get this far. Breath work, even a lot of EFT work, which is wonderful. I did it myself at some point when I was going through some difficult things, but it wasn't getting to the root of stuff. It was bypassing what was really there. So this ability to contain what's being felt and then know, okay, this is enough. Now I am going to resource, right? So again, when not to resource, you got to make that decision. I would never in a million years say to someone, if I was in private practice, I'm going to take that resource away from you right now and let's see what happens, right? If someone needs it, they need it. And then I might find ways to strategically have them open up their orienting, for example, or feel the tightness in their lungs and have them make a bit more space as opposed to kind of white knuckling it through a really intense sensation. They need something, I'm gonna be like, great, let that happen. Let your moves, let your legs move, let these things occur so that you feel more comfortable. And then that lets me know, ah, okay, here's where we're at. We got to go even slower with the work we're doing. All right, next line down. So this is kind of a run-on sentence, but that's the first word. But making the choice to not dive into the felt sense and honoring, it's the word honoring, our limits by using an external or internal resource is healing in itself. So again, but making the choice to dive into the felt sense and honoring our limits by using an external or internal resource is healing in itself. This choice, this ability to go, I felt this enough. Now I'm going to need to do this thing. Now I'm going to have to take that smoke or have that drink. Someone mentioned here alcohol and addiction. Yeah, we're not ever going to say, just stop. Now, there are variations of that because certain addictions can kill us. If we think of more extreme drugs like heroin, for example, and various other ones that really can cause a person to overdose, I understand that's a completely different situation, as opposed to that one glass of scotch at the end of the night that just helps take the edge off just a little bit. Again, not saying do that. Everyone's different, but anyone that I've talked to who has really gotten over an addiction, often it's done in a titrated way. Some people have the capacity to go cold turkey, but that doesn't always come with the best outcome because then the body goes through massive withdrawal. Again, not my specialty, but I've seen it enough to know everyone is different. It is very hard to give someone a step-by-step protocol on how to move out of harmful resources, addictions, etc. All right, final one of this page. Overriding our capacity creates more strain and survival stress and is counterproductive. That's the final word of the page, counterproductive. Again, remember those beach balls. So this is the, we could call it the push-pull, the tug-of-war, the learning, the trial and error that everyone here is working with, and to some degree, everyone always is when they're on this path as a human currently on planet Earth, is what is overriding? If we've lived a world of overriding constantly and pushing, 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 When we don't override, it might feel like we're doing nothing. We're doing the littlest bit, and I've seen this in private practice, in discussing with colleagues. How much a person needs is often so much smaller than what they think when it comes to the input that their system can handle. And by input, I mean feeling something, but even feeling safety. For some of you, when you start to feel more safe as we go through this program and we work with, say, the kidney adrenals in lab four, I mentioned this last week. There's something at the beginning of this work as too much safety, the system can swing and go, I don't want that. That's not how my system has operated. And then what often happens is that's where someone then finds a weird way of sabotaging themselves. They have so much open capacity and flow that it's so foreign that the universe and the brain, the body, I don't even know if it's the soul, something finds a way to trip us and give us a little bit of a jolt. So again, don't underestimate the power of going extra slow and really building these layers slowly, methodically, consciously. All right, page three. When not to orient. So this is so individual. So individual. I cannot say until I am faced with someone over many, many days, ah, this person is orienting too much. That's why, blah, blah, blah. So, this is something that, again, you will have to feel into, sense. This is where working with a somatic practitioner can be helpful. I'll give an example in a second. But orienting can take us out of processing internal sensation. It's bringing ourselves into the environment, right? It's like that example of the kid that falls and off of his bike. If we try to engage with little one who's in an absolute stress response and get them to orient to us before they're ready, that's where they're like, ah, get away. I'm feeling this stuff, right? So orienting can take us out of processing internal sensation. Next line down, but there's a big but here. It's better than disconnecting from ourselves and our environment. So, you know, if there is something intense happening that's a bit too much, and you're like, yeah, not ready for this, then by all means, orient, resource. But it can also be a crutch. So you have to be the judge. You got to judge. You got to make a call, a judgment call on if you do or do not. It is one of the most important things to be able to do, orient, see the world around us. Of course, there's a reason why I teach it. There's a re reason why there's two full lessons on it in the course and a few extras. So it's very important. So I'm also saying, I'm not saying this because it's not important. It is important. But with anything complex, there's always an and. And it also depends on these factors. So, next line down, final bullet point of this one, you have to learn how to experiment. Experiment with what you can and cannot tolerate. You have to learn how to experiment with what you can and cannot tolerate. Now, orienting is often taught visually, and that's how I teach it. But there are other ways, and this is baked in SPSM, other senses, right? What is another key sense? Hearing, smell, taste, this ability to feel even vibration. The other night, our power went off like five times. I didn't sleep very well. It might be why my throat got sore yesterday. And when that happens, our generator kicks in because we live rural. That vibration I can't sleep when that's there because my body is orienting to this hum under me, right? So eventually, Seth, bless him, got up and turned the generator off. But, so we can orient to vibration. We can orient to more than just vision because there are people, obviously, we know, who are not able to use their vision, who are blind, and they get along, get around. Okay, of course, there's a missing part, so there is a vulnerability there. But what else happens? Their hearing heightens, their smell heightens, their sixth sense heightens, their sense of kinesthetic awareness heightens. So orienting, when not to orient, this is going to be very individual. One of the things I've seen the most common, one of the most common, and this occurred recently in some intensives that I was running, one of our students had a default of just immediately looking around when something intense occurred. And I actually said, stop that. Just see what it's like to not let the head and eyes look around. Very different than get constricted. I didn't say get constricted. Keep the flow inside, but don't engage with the external. Go in. So one could say that the orienting is a safety mechanism. Like, I don't want to feel what's in here. I'm going to look out there. And that's okay. That's okay. But at some point, we need to get into the deeper stuff. And that's where orienting, while important, sometimes has to be put kind of on the shelf. And then we go internal. And then again, like with resourcing, when we feel, that's too much, then feel the feet, feel the legs, feel the ground under us, orient, et cetera, et cetera. All right, number three, when not to take a deep breath. So this is similar to orienting. So same points for breath as for orienting. That's the first line. And sometimes we need to just take a deep breath. Sometimes we need more air. Sometimes we just need extra oxygen. That's the next bullet point. Extra oxygen, but also more expulsion of waste products. The physiological example I'll give, when you exercise, those who exercise and do cardiovascular activity, you got to increase your breath rate, not just for oxygen, but blowing out the waste products of metabolism. If you don't, that's where we get lactic acid and we start to get tired. So there needs to be this nice exchange of inhale, exhale for the task at hand. Now, oddly, in private practice, what I had to do more with people, maybe Rebecca would agree with me here, I sometimes had to ask people to breathe less. They would start to feel an emotion, and I'm going to kind of mime this out. There would be this, and I know what they're doing, and it's fine. That was a coping and management strategy of exhaling, calming. And it's true, when you exhale slow, the heart rate does slow down. Oddly, when you inhale, the heart rate speeds up. It's just the way the physiology works. And so people are very intelligent. They know, oh, I gotta breathe out. Sometimes people would take a deep breath, but often it was this controlled breathing of exhale. And I would have to teach people, what would it be like if you didn't do that? And often what occurs is they will feel this sense of their breath getting really quiet, sensations getting a little bit bigger. And often under that is some kind of emotion. Some kind of sadness, anger, grief, all the things, something being held in. So deep breaths are great therapeutically, maybe when we need it, naturally. But as you get deeper into growing your somatic capacity, you will find that your breath will start to spontaneously reset as it needs to. Animals do it quite lovely. Does anybody here have a dog that like will be just sitting there and all of a sudden you hear this big like this big this I don't even know what it would be called. They're breathing, but it's like they're resetting, they're releasing. And that comes in through us when we let our body become more organic. Sighs, right? All these sorts of things. I think my sound's okay. You guys still hear me? Someone just said their sound was off. Okay. Sound gremlins have us today, it seems like. Okay, the other thing I'll say with breath here, this again is a bit more advanced, but I'm putting this in. When you're working with something quite deep, something that is maybe a trauma that was really scary, I would classify this as near death, high terror, high vulnerability, where your breath like has to go really, really quiet. And it might be that this happens in an intense situation, or it could just be like having, I know for some of us, Thanksgiving dinner is coming up in the States. We just had Canadian Thanksgiving. You might find you're around your family members that you don't hate, but you don't love them, but you're there. And you might even not notice that you've kind of like suppressed your natural breath for 5 hours because you got to be kind of different with them than when you're with your best friend or your spouse. And then you might find you get home and you're like, oh, why am I so tight? Why am I so stiff? Why am I a little irritated? And if you come into your breath and your breathing, you might go, wow, I've been like limiting my breathing to manage myself in this social situation. Right? It doesn't have to be family. It could be going to work every day and not being able to have that flow. So what I was saying is often when I would work with folks, they would be afraid to let their breath hit kind of this rock bottom. This is important for context. And I would say, what would it be like to just not take a breath yet and wait? And one of the lessons you will get called Cultivating the Exhale talks about this and teaches you this, where you get familiar with feeling the breath stop and waiting, waiting, waiting until it comes in naturally. Okay, it's taking a deep, spontaneous breath. And often when we hit that level of going a little deeper and a little deeper, waiting, it can bring back somatic memories, emotional memories of when we had to really get quiet, go into shock, freeze, shut down. And we need to sometimes experience that in the body, not this big, beautiful breath. Does that make sense? This that right? Like this, the trauma doesn't give us big, beautiful breath. The stressful events often limits and hinders our breath. So one of the ways we work with breath is actually to not have big breath, is actually to get comfortable feeling how lower breath to no breath matches those near-death experiences. So that again gets taught in cultivating the exhale. Now, breathing exercises that would be classified as breath work, where you're doing like, I'll just name some of them, an inhale for five, hold for five, exhale for five, that's box breathing. Another one is a increasing in for four, hold for seven, out for eight. And then there's all these other ones where you're, you know, inhale, 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 hold. But there's so many, right? You can so many. From a therapeutic point of view, if you like have lower lung capacity, this was actually very important for people who had long COVID. Breathing got hard, and being able to practice expanding the lungs and the ribs was important because the breath and the respiration really got damaged. Someone with emphysema, for example, pulmonary problems. Breath work can be really amazing, but when it comes to the trauma stuff and getting into the nervous system and working with the breath, we just don't want to manipulate it. We want it to find its natural expression and reset without us poking around with it. And for those that I've met who have been breath work practitioners and then got deeper into this work, it is very difficult for them to move someone through a breath work practice when they have that nervous system lens on board. So I like to say therapeutically can be great, right? It can be great. It can be really good. If you're on an airplane and you're feeling panicky, do some breath work. Like that's where the resources are very important. That's where bringing in orienting can be important. But that's very different than getting into the nervous system and working with these old traumas. Okay. Yeah, someone just said what I was thinking but couldn't get out of my brain. Breath work practices, therapeutic breath work practices can be great for asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder disease. I think that's what COPD stands for. I will also add, because there's always an and, the lung is important, but so is the spine. So are the ribs. So are the diaphragms around, which I talked about yesterday. So is the pelvis. As the pelvis is locked up and the hips are really tight, you can't get that lung expansion the same way. So you need, again, to have a very holistic approach. Okay, bottom of three here. Let me have a little more drink. So what or when you are not sure what to do? When you are not sure what to do. So remember, this is the four whens of when to not breathe deeply, when not to orient, when not to resource. But maybe you just don't know what to do, and that's totally valid. And what can start to happen, you guys, when you get all these tools, all these lessons, by the end of 12 weeks, you'll have kidney adrenals and diaphragms and joints and brainstem and gut brain and orienting and potent posture and resources and blah, 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 blah. And one could say, oh, this is overwhelming. I don't know what to do when I'm feeling stressed. What should I go to? This is where you have to use your internal intuition. And some might call this muscle testing, but it's not that necessarily. It is in some ways, but it's like, what are you being drawn to do? Take out that program sheet that has all the lessons and just like, ah, that one feels right. Even if it doesn't make sense. That is something that you will have to work with in your own system, figure that out. Because sometimes the best thing is to do nothing and to just feel. And to feel the ground, sense your breath, and trust that the body will give you what it needs. In this moment, in this beginning moment, if I talk to the beginners, we are learning the basics. You are learning the basic formulas. If I think of math, we're learning literally 1 + 1 = 2, right? 2 × 4. Blah, 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 all these things. We're learning the basics, the basic formulas. As we become more masterful, you don't need those formulas. You just create what happens and what's needed. That would be a very high level of mastery of this work. But at the beginning, you need the formula, you need the exercises, you need the guidance. Just like anyone who is a brilliant mathematician at some point had to learn their 1, 2, 3s. Right, and how to do algebra, all that kind of stuff. Strange analogy, but that came to my mind. So when you are not sure what to do, first three words, and this might be easier said than done, do not worry. Or have a chill out. Don't panic. Just sense, I don't know what to do. If you don't know what to do, go back to the basics. Feel the ground. Sense your breath. This is where you orient. This is where you resource. Where is your posture? Next line. Plus, remember, learning, it's the word, learning. A second language, because that's what we're kind of doing here. We're learning a second language. We're learning nervous system regulation, somatic capacity, embodiment. For some of us, the first time ever, right? So learning a second language takes practice and time. When you're first learning a new language as an adult, I'll add that. Who here has learned a second language as an adult fluently? I have usually the Euros are the ones who get A plus for this one. Or it says measly North Americans. Unless we had immigrant parents, we don't know much except for like fourth grade Spanish, right? Or French in my case. Someone said, yes, two. Yes, some of the Euros will know six languages, and it drives me crazy. So lucky. So when you're learning a second language and you become fluent with it, when you're fluent with it, you're not looking at your book. You're not looking for the translation. It's just flowing. And there's this moment where you're almost there, but not quite. I remember watching Ilya, actually, who you'll meet in the movement lessons. He learned Spanish fluently. I was just so impressed that he did that as an adult, through love, through a girlfriend, and he learned it and is able to teach in Spanish. I'm like, wow, that's super cool. But it means you have to immerse. You can't just do it an hour here and there. You preferably have to be in a culture that's speaking that language. It's not easy to learn a language fluently at community college, right? Where then you go home and you speak your normal language, your mother tongue, all night long. So I say that because learning a second language as an adult takes time. There is something similar with learning nervous system regulation and somatic mastery when we didn't get that growing up. And I might even say, even if we didn't have horrific abuse, the culture that we're in hasn't given us that somatic embodiment, generally speaking. So we're learning this whole other way of being very connected with our higher brain, but also our spiritual, intuitive intelligence, and then all the physiological things we're learning too. It's a big degree. If I think about a degree in, university, you're learning to master something very, very important, but very complex. So, we're only what, 3 weeks in, 2 weeks in. Give yourself time. It's just the beginning. The good news is that this is our birthright to be in flow, to have organs that work, to have a brain that works, to have connection, to find relationship. So again, give this time, because it does happen and it will happen when you put the work to it and you keep integrating and integrating. So second, from the bottom there, again, this is when you're not sure what to do. As more neurosensory skills come into your repertoire, so this is like the final sentence here, as more nervous system neurosensory skills come into your repertoire, all the lessons within the labs, coupled, that's the word, coupled with the theory, those one, two, threes, and ABCs, turn to page four, guys, right on sentence. We start to string together the words of internal somatic awareness. We start to string together the words of internal somatic awareness. And that comes back to that analogy of learning a second language, right? You learn alphabets, counting words, little sentences, and then it becomes a conversation slowly. But even then, you might not know how to write, right? So at the beginning, it feels very raw because it's just super new. But with practice, so next line down, with practice, we begin to have our favorite internal resources we go to without conscious thought. That's why I asked at the beginning, who here has been naturally orienting already? Who's been naturally feeling, God, I gotta go to the bathroom, better go, or I'm hungry, or I'm not hungry, or I'm tired, and you're listening to those things. That is a sign that you're already getting the language on board. With practice, next line, we begin to naturally, it's the word naturally, move to our internal system without conscious thought. It just happens. So we're not thinking, oh, I better go feel my diaphragms or my kidney adrenals. It's just there. It's the difference between thinking, what is that word in this language? Versus it's just there. You just blurt it out, right? So with practice, we begin to naturally move our internal system. This is a third point down without conscious thought. This means we are becoming more fluent in the language of our somatic experience. We are getting more comfortable with it. We are growing nervous system capacity. That's the last word, capacity. These next points to me are so exciting because this is what creates all of the amazing healing and success stories that maybe some of you have listened to or read from our alumni. This is what's creating that healing of the immune system, healing of what we might call mental illness, healing of anxiety disorders, insomnia. It's this. So this is very important. So next line. So we're growing more nervous system capacity. This means we're getting better at attuning to ourselves, not to mention knowing what we need and when. Now, side note, attunement is so important. Many of us didn't get good nervous system regulation because we didn't have solid attunement from our primary caregiver. We didn't have solid, secure attachment. They were not attuned to us, so they didn't give us what we needed. They thought that cry was hunger when really it was, I'm too hot. They didn't know that grimace on my face was something to pay attention to. They just put me in my crib and shut the door and made me cry it out. Like, these are just some examples. So if we put that aside, we can't go back, we can't change the past. But what we're doing is we're getting better at attuning to ourselves. So this is where this work becomes your responsibility, right? Not your parents. It's not about them going to them and saying, you didn't do this for me. How shame on you, right? We don't do that unless the person is really interested in learning about this, which is often not the case. And for many of us, our parents have passed, so we can't do that. But we attune to ourselves, and that is what fixes this lineage of misattunement. So, for many of us, this process of better attuning to ourselves, next line down, you guys, number three from the bottom, become more fluent in our somatic experience. And being with it with awareness is new territory. Those are the two words in that sentence. New territory. If we were not attuning to ourselves might feel like a foreign language, back to the language metaphor. And it might feel confusing. It might even feel like we don't deserve it because our wiring is such to not get what we need. And so now we're offering our own selves as adults what we need. That is monumentally different than how maybe we've been living, even subconsciously, our entire life. So this is where you need to be very gentle with yourself because there'll be a part of us that wants to sabotage it, maybe. Or say, you don't deserve this. And then that's where you have to go, nope, this is my biological birthright. It just didn't get imprinted into my system in the right way at the beginning. And I am now rechain I'm now rewiring and rewriting that past history. So in brackets, I have, again, similar to how a newborn baby is constantly having new experiences. So newborn humans are sponges for new experiences. It's why they sleep so much, right? They're constantly processing all these new things, life here, breathing, moving, gravity, interacting with another human, all these things. It's a lot of new information. So I share this because even though we're adults, and most of us, I have no doubt, are very capable humans. You might find at the beginning of this work that you're a bit more tired, and it's not because you're going into collapse or shutdown. You need more rest, right? You're creating new pathways and patterns, and you need to let those patterns really settle and solidify. So if your way of being in the world is a certain amount of output, be very cautious if you start being hard on yourself because you can't get as much done over the next year. Be really gracious with where you're at and go, oh, I'm like a newborn baby right now. I'm learning all these new things. I'm learning how to listen, how to interact, how to feel my body. God, I haven't felt my body ever. This is wild, right? That is all new information, and you got to let that really, we would call it in the stages of neuroplastic healing, this is the neurorelaxation. This is where you're really letting things repair and recover and digest. Okay, next line down. This is how building is the word. Building capacity creates nervous system regulation in an adult. Right? This course is for adults only, or an adult that has the interest and ability to really think and feel and guide themselves. Some people often ask, can kids do this? And not really. This isn't for children. It's for their parents so that they can become more regulated and then the kids feel it through them. I have heard of some teenagers who have been interested when mom or dad are doing a lesson or listening, and then they'll kind of peek around and just listen, and that's cool. But typically, yeah, we need to be really in our own autonomy and be like, I want to learn this and do this for myself. Final one. Again, this is building capacity. Next line above was this is for an adult. Whereas for an infant, remember for an infant, their self-regulation is created via co-regulation with another human. So again, that newborn baby, their self-regulation is created via co-regulation with another human as a result of that attunement. If you are in the midst of having little ones right now, what a gift that you can see this in real time, or maybe you have grandchildren or nieces or nephews. I've heard from folks, they just see babies completely differently when they understand their nervous system. You see children differently. You even see folks who are, one might call, harmful individuals differently because you realize all these things are happening because their systems probably didn't get the start that they needed, or something really bad happened to them on their path in life that led them to be in absolute protection and defense, right? So there is something to be said about building capacity, growing nervous system regulation, at least at this level, which is seeing humanity in a completely different way, which is super important. Next week, as you saw at the bottom of this handout, it's kind of leading into the next training call, which is training call number three, the importance of regulation and restoring somatic safety. And then I'll dip into the differences between healing shock trauma and early trauma, because they're very different. They're very, very different. And you need sometimes both happening at the same time. I haven't met anyone who hasn't had a mix of both. And so, depending on which area is more intense, sometimes you have to work with one before the other. So, this would really be in service of those who might be working with someone who is a practitioner. And that is it for today. My voice has gotten better. So, thanks for letting my throat regulate. Just needed to speak and talk. We covered a lot today. We always cover a lot on these calls. So as I often say, if you can, before diving into emails or making dinner or doing what you have to do, of course, if you got to tend to your children, that's completely different. But if you have the space to just take a break, you can get some fresh air, depending on where you are, look at the sun, look at the stars, look at the clouds. And really listen, what does my body need right now before I go to the next thing and the next thing? Seth, we'll see all of you on Thursday for your call, Q&A call. Happy October, everyone. Thanks, Rebecca, for being in the chat. Thanks, Susan, for being in the chat. And we'll see you next week. Bye, everyone.